Redwood Soundwave.
Hey listeners, I just want to remind you this is only half of a conversation that we had for the Batch episode. I think it's a pretty good half, but there's another really good half. And so if you want to hear the entire thing for free, it's at patreon.com/redwoodsoundlabs. And if you like what you hear, you can pitch in $5 a month and get a whole bunch of extra content. Welcome to Fields of Glory, Batch episode for Hustlin'. I'm Biggs.
And I am Aaron. And Biggs, I went back. The listener doesn't know this, but we are making this right about the time that our draft episode is airing. So I went back and listened to that draft episode. And when you set out to watch this batch, which consists of The Hustler from 1961, Over the Top from 1987, and Rounders from 1998, I've got a whole list of things that you said that you wanted to go looking for. And I kind of want to walk through some of these. But one of the ones that you said is that you've always kind of liked this rogue character, this kind of roguish character. You've always liked that. Well, here we have three of these movies. I want you to kind of revisit that at the top. How do you feel about that observation? Why is that? And what's the takeaway after watching these three movies on that?
I do think we covered this kind of in The Hustler, which was, I figured out from listening to that dude break it down that I just like the outsider because I feel like an outsider a lot of the time in my life. And I'm super agreeable with people, but I adamantly disagree with whatever is around me. The way I can best put it is I always go to a new place and then I'm trying to fit in. And then I see the things that unify everybody in that place. And then I kind of don't like them and try and change their mind about it gently. Like in Montana, the way that manifests is I tell them that Californians are just fine and that we're not the most special place on earth. We're not. Like everywhere else is super cool. And in fact, the coolest thing in Montana is Yellowstone, which I'd say 90% of the people I know in Montana have never gone to Yellowstone, even though it's 2 hours away. So it's like that is literally a great place on earth that they just don't bother to see, but they'll brag about it, I guess. They go on vacation in the state. They never leave the state. And they talk about other states like they totally know what's going on. That's like the internal thing that I always get. And I like that these hustling characters come in and they shake everything up and then you have to deal with it. And I don't think Matt Damon is so much that character, but Worm is. And Worm's also a hustler. So you still get it in that movie.
That's an interesting observation. Way back in 1962 or so, Stanley Trachtenberg wrote The Hustler as Hero, which is right about the time this movie came out, obviously responding to this movie and writing history and saying that this is part of the cut of this character, is that they're going to come in from outside, and because they're from outside, say Ashland, Oregon, or whatever it may be, they're going to have a little eyeball on the here and now that the people that live here and now won't see. They just won't see it. And that gives them this kind of insight, which is going to kind of shake everything down to the core.
And it gives them an edge. They always see something that you're not supposed to see.
Interesting, interesting. You also mentioned that it's like there's an angle of kind of like cheating a little bit that's interesting, and in part because maybe you're not good enough, which in hindsight, I'm interested in, like, I'm not sure that one checks out. Maybe it does, maybe not. You said that you want him to get beat up pretty good, and I'm like, that happens to pretty much everyone except for Stallone. I don't know. Maybe it does to Stallone.
Stallone takes a punch, so he does get beat up technically, but it's like he gets cold cocked out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he beats up the guy because that's Stallone's MO. Like, honestly, Over the Top doesn't totally vibe with these three, but it vibes right? enough, you know?
It sits out a lot. I think it sits out a lot because of the dude that Stallone is. And this is another touch on some of the reading we had for The Batch. We read The Ultimate Stallone Reader, the intro and the Rocky Effect chapter there, and kind of talked about how he's a rule follower and not really a rule breaker. And in The Hustler and in Rounders, we talk about the rule and the code, and there's like weird echoes of that in Over the Top, but Stallone is so, like, quote, contained. They said he's very contained and a very rule driven person, and I think that really shows when you look at all of, like, these three movies together. Like, it sets him apart.
Yeah, it's almost like Sylvester Stallone is not a hustler except for his kid literally calls him a hustler.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's a legacy of him arm wrestling when he meets Smasher or something at the bar or whatever. God, it's such a ridiculous encounter there. Anyway, he's like, I heard that you're the guy that can't be beat. And this is before he's trying to be like the champ.
Well, and he goes, you heard wrong. So that's his version of downplaying it to get the wager up, right? And that's almost where it ends for his hustling, other than he's doing it across the United States. It's implied. He does it once in the movie, but
just that one time. It's weird.
But you get the impression that this is a thing that he does because people know him and he hasn't been in this tournament.
And he's not just a truck driver, that's for sure. He's also an arm wrestler. And that's not just for fun. There's always some kind of competitive angle, probably financial, it would seem. That's what he sets his kid up to do with that other kid. Just wild. Anyway, you sent me a host of takeaways. You want to dive into some of those?
Yeah, let's go to the first one, which we already touched on, but there's a constant threat of violence in these movies. In The Hustler, Paul Newman gets his thumbs broken in that movie, and at the end of it, he's told to stay out of the pool halls or he'll kill him, like straight up. There is that threat of violence right there. In Over the Top, Sylvester Stallone gets decked. He's driving a truck through the through the house. And because like these guys are going to mess him up if he doesn't go away, so he uses the truck to get through. And then I think they show up to try and rough him up in the middle of the tournament after he's hurt his arm. You also get the guy he's competing against who wants to compete against him earlier when he's hustling the other guy, like quote unquote hustling the other guy. And I think the reason why he doesn't face him right then, because he says wait till the tournament, is because when you see that guy's cutaway, he's like, I'll break a guy's arm and stuff like that.
That to me was the most immediate cut, was that one there. And also the guy drinking motor oil and the eyeball strain. That may not be a threat of violence, but like there's a primordial.
Exactly. And then Rounders is hanging over them the entire movie that they could get roughed up, right? Like Worm could get roughed up in prison at the beginning. Worm gets them roughed up at the lodge when they're playing against the cops. And then Worm also gets roughed up by the pimp grandma because he owes him money and he takes his 10 grand from him and almost messes him and Matt Damon up when they try and straighten it out and Worm pops off at the mouth. You get the constant threat of violence while he's playing poker against KGB. He's constantly telling him that, you know, he's going to kill him after the morning after he busts him up or whatever. So,
and as an archetype of masculinity, this is obviously very ho-hum analysis. But when we step back and say we're talking about a movie that is about pool and a movie that is about arm wrestling and a movie that is about poker, like the threat of violence, I mean, I guess the arm wrestling one because big muscly arms, I suppose. Football, I would say, well, yeah, boxing, of course. Even The Karate Kid, the threat of violence, perhaps. But with these ones, I think it's interesting that this is an angle, it's a component of hustling, that because you balance on that boundary between the law and the code, and also there's just this kind of level of sheer desperation, it's all or nothing we learned with that poker mindset, that kind of manifests itself this way. It's like the risk.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I like about these movies, is whoever the hustler is, with the exception of Stallone, which once again, he's so tenuously a hustler compared to like all the other movies I've seen, but they usually lose the fight.
Yeah.
The threat of violence is like they have to scramble from it. And I always like that because I like imperfect characters. Like I like characters that go into a situation and cannot handle it. That's like a way to see it, because I don't like that roided out guy who wins every fight no matter what. Like The Rock is a persona I think of, for example. Like Dwayne Johnson, famously, he will not lose a fight in a movie. He won't do a movie if he doesn't get to win every single fight. And so they had a Fast and Furious movie, which I've not seen, just to put it on Front Street. But famously, once again, he goes up against Vin Diesel and they tie, because Vin Diesel also has the same edict that he will not lose a fight in a movie. So what do you do when the two guys come up against each other and neither of them can lose the fight? I guess they're okay with tying.
Two irredeemable egos that have nowhere to go.
Yeah. I don't like that. I like watching a character who's vulnerable and can be taken down. You know, like to me, that's way more exciting to watch somebody who could lose a fight, who could lose the whole thing. I want there to be stakes, you know, and that's one way of putting stakes in.
This is lost on the podcaster's audience, and Biggs did say it was an accident, but he's wearing a Stallone shirt.
I am. Yeah.
Like, he is like, this is Rocky. Rocky, and it's a far more fascinating character in a lot of ways. And I've always been a big underdog guy, so I'm here with you.
And famously, will lose a fight in a movie. He's not one of those guys. Like his most famous movie is Rocky, and he loses that fight. That's partly what makes it such a memorable movie. It's why it got greenlit. Was the ending? They were like, "Whoa, whoa! He loses a fight? That's amazing! I've never seen a script that did that before." You know?
Yeah.
Such a simple thing, but it puts stakes in it, and it makes it feel a little more real when you watch it. You can put yourself in that character.
Yeah, you get that with The Hustler for sure. I think that Matt Damon is an interesting take on this. He's vulnerable because of his association with Worm. If he's in the driver's seat, I don't know there's even really a problem in that movie. I don't know.
No.
It would be interesting, right? Like, so he's not really the problem. It's kind of Worm that's the problem, and it's his loyalty to Worm. And part of the takeaway that we learn across all of these movies, again, except for the Stallone movie, is that you can't have family. You can't have the women will be disposable or you're going to turn your back on them and drive off into the sunset kind of thing. And I don't know. That's interesting, too. Like just this idea that if you don't go it alone, then could be itself a kind of mark of vulnerability here.
Yeah, you just tapped right into the next thing I wanted to talk about, which is you have to lose your girlfriend or your wife because of things around the sport. I guess, like, once again, it's over the top. You have to kind of infer that because he leaves his wife and doesn't give a reason, but she's been left before the movie starts and he never rekindles with her. He just has two phone conversations with her. So
he doesn't give a reason to her or to the kid, just no reason. The movie's like, that's not important. We have a guy who drinks motor oil. Canon Films, ladies and gentlemen. Canon Films.
Yeah, they baked that apple pie wrong because they put motor oil in it instead of, like, I don't know, sugar.
And nails and ground beef and a monster truck toy. They're like, this is what Americans like. It's like, sort of, kind of, yeah, but not like that. No.
No, it's like saying, you like eggs, right? Yeah, I like eggs. You like sugar, right? Yeah, I like sugar. You like frosting? Yeah, okay. I'm just going to, like, crack them all in a bowl and not bake them. Here you go. And I'm like, no, make that the cake, dude. Like, what are you doing?
Just this little soup of granulated. Anyway.
The other love interest in these movies as well is, like, the hustler. Like, part of it is Paul Newman needs to hustle alone. Like, that's clearly a theme in that movie. And that also shows where he's kind of settling down with that woman. And I say that because I honestly just can't remember her name. She was a character and well drawn, and the actress was really good. I just can't remember who it was. This is a little bit longer than we actually recorded here that we're talking about it.
It's been a couple weeks.
Like, she winds up dying. Like, she commits suicide, right? And then over in Rounders, his girlfriend leaves him. Gretchen Mol's character, like, is just pulls up the stakes and is done with him. Understandably, like, totally understandably, and leaves at a good time. But he knew that risk when he got tempted by Worm with the game and then turned back to go to the game. There was no reason he had to go to that game. He just felt that call and felt like he had to do it. And he knew on some level, which is why he was lying to her about out drinking with Worm. He lied to her because he knew she'd leave him. Straight up. So yeah, they're like distancing themselves to do this thing. It makes sense. Like, if you're in a line of work where you're going to get beat up or you're going to lose all your money, it makes relationships pretty hard, I would imagine.
I sent you this interest that I had in this notion of the will to play, which kind of links to the will to fight, which is something I'm looking at the Real War Project over there, and how it links this force control metaphor to, like, the blue collar worker, and how the consequence there is, like, you got to go to work, you got to do this line of work, otherwise you're broke or destitute and you can lose it all at any moment. And I'm like, that's kind of what football players go through. If we look at, like, Any Given Sunday, is like your whole body is on the line. It's just merging it through a sport, and it shows us that it's like it's the logic of what happens and what the masculine performance is expected to go through, and then the mechanism of the sport that provides, like, the stakes and the vocabulary and the justifications and all of that. You know, it's really not so much any one sport in particular that does that. It's really, really interesting how much, when you look at Rounders in Any Given Sunday, there's a very similar kind of vocabulary there, just about threat and risk and putting it all on the line for, you know, what.
What block was Any Given Sunday in? It was with Rudy is bench warmers elevated to glory. That's what it was. Yep, yep. So I think that there's something that connects these with the Hustler movies, because in both of these batches, they had women that they were willing to get rid of. And not in every case it panned out where the woman was totally out of the picture, but they did at least cast them off at some point in all of those movies, mm-hmm. as they did in this one. So maybe it's just purely an outsider thing. Like, if you're an outsider, you also have to be an outsider with your relationship. Maybe that's what these movies are telling us.
This idea that you got to be a loner no matter what. Piper Laurie played Sarah Packard in The Hustler. I just looked that up. Yes. Yep, I knew you would want to go back for it. So while you were talking, I got that. And I definitely want to drop this. It's a bit of a non sequitur, but it does link to the conversation we had about outsider insight, the way that the person who comes from, you know, outside of town has this insight into what's going on. If you remember, Biggs, I said that The Hustler represented a kind of shift in this mentality, but I could not remember what the shift was. Well, I found it. I have to tie this up, otherwise I'm going to lose my mind. It was from the Trachtenberg article, and he says that The Hustler represents this shift from the kind of, you know, outlaw or from the Old West, or the gangster who represents this outsider, and that person is basically there as a kind of virtuous action. They give us this kind of virtuous alternative for activity, but now with The Hustler in particular, they find what it means to live a virtuous life. Like, not necessarily by being a virtuous person, but potentially by losing everything, perhaps, or by, you know, coming upon some huge hard moral dilemma that makes them go all or nothing, as it may be. The expectation is that the stakes are everything. This is just to tie this up, that the expectation is that the stakes are everything. That's true for your body. It's true for your relationships. It means you can be destroyed and killed. It means you can't have any family. And Stallone is like, well, yeah, but you could also do it like this with arm wrestling and like have all of those things, no problem.
Yeah, dude. It's funny how the ego can just throw everything off of these things.
That was an interesting insight in that episode, I think. Like, we're getting a little Freudian, but we're not the only ones doing this work. But, like, you were kind of mentioning how you saw an interview with him, or biography, his own biography, where he talked about the role that his violent relationship with his dad may have had with him learning to just having to get up and try again and overcome it, and how he bakes that into a character that later becomes kind of toxic. But that deep down, there's also this desire to be like a good person. You know, it's like we talked about how Stallone is not Vin Diesel. He's not The Rock. Like, Rocky, first and foremost, that's what he wants to be, is like a good person. And he has to go the distance somehow, because it's the only way he has to do that. I don't know.
Yeah. And just for reference, that documentary was called Sly, and Sylvester Stallone produced it and put it out.
Yeah, I saw the top. I didn't watch it, but I saw it go by on the thing, and I'm like, oh, I gotta watch that. It looks amazing.
I mean, especially for the movies we've talked about, I think you would find it fascinating. He definitely spent some time on Rocky, and he breaks down the meta aspects of that. I mean, that stuff you were reading off, a lot of those things are observations he's made about himself. So it's definitely there, and it's really cool to go through. Money, such a giant motivator for all of these movies, even Sylvester Stallone's movie. Money is huge. And The Hustler, he loses everything. He's got to get his bankroll back to face the guy who took his bankroll. And that's facing all kinds of problems to get there, right? Like, that's partly how he gets his thumb broken. And then in Over the Top, he needs the money for the trucking company. So he's wrestling arms, and he's driving truck, and he's competing in the arm wrestling tournament. And then in Rounders, I mean,
wrestling arms.
And then in Rounders, Mike is trying to get to the World Series of Poker, and it starts there. And then it switches to, I need money so that my friend doesn't get killed. And then it becomes, I need money so that we don't get killed. And then he's got the money, and he's going right back to that initial goal. And what's the big takeaway for why he's going to the World Series of Poker? I think it's understood to make more money.
To make $1 million. Like, the grand prize is $1 million. I'm like, okay.
Money is huge in these movies, and it's everything. Like, these competitions don't happen without money. You had that literature for The Hustler, and you were talking about how they're really good at this and they could do it on their own, but they would get bored and wouldn't care. Like, they need that stake there. They need that money to go away with at the end of the day. Like, that's intrinsic to all three of these movies. These movies are motivated by money.
Yeah, this is Ned Polsky's article, which came out in 1964, and it's just called The Hustler. And it does start with a really great quotation from Blaise Pascal. Like, here's my take on this, is that this just this quotation and also very much The Hustler, the money is kind of a byproduct. It's more about the action, isn't it? Like, isn't it more about toppling the big player and being the best that there is? And the money is just the mechanism by which you have to do that? Like, he has money at multiple times in that movie, but he just keeps right on going because deep down, that's not what it's about for him. And what's interesting to me is that this is also true in Over the Top in a weird way. He's not really interested in like any of the glory or the fame. He just wants to run a trucking company. And it's weird because he's already a trucker. And I'm like, you're already a trucker. Like, why not just keep being a trucker? Like, what's the problem? There's no implication that he's got a bad job or that he hates his job or that it doesn't pay him enough. He just wants his own trucking company with his kid, I guess.
He does say a couple of times he's got an old truck, so he needs a new truck. I think that's what the rub is, right?
But even there, it's like, it's not even just the big payout in the fame. It's more just to like keep doing what he's doing. And then with Rounders, it's weird because if you take Worm out of the equation, he may not even do any of it. He may not even go for it. So it's not until he goes completely bust and like literally skirts with death that he decides that this is who he's supposed to be. And he goes to try to win $1 million. Like, he's the only person, I think, in the batch that's like, I want the big chunk of change. And that big chunk of change is a $1 million payout.
Johnny Chan is such a huge part of that movie. And I think we might have done a bit of a disservice not talking about it more. Yeah. But he sat down at the table with this guy who won the World Series of Poker, yeah, and he beat him. And it's like The Hustler in that way, right?
It was. I love the angle and I love the look on that guy's face when Matt Damon is narrating. Like, you can tell this person is not pretending to be a champion poker player. Like,
yeah, no, he was the real deal. And they went through reams of videotape to find the most exciting one. Yeah. I think they were going to do something else and then they saw that scene and they were like, this is what we got to have in the movie.
Yeah.
And then because of that, they were like, well, it makes sense if we can get him to put him in the movie. He wanted to beat him and then he was licking his wounds. But I will say, does the movie happen the way it happens? No. But I ultimately believe he would have walked away from being a lawyer. And I think he would have lost his girlfriend. I think he would have gone back into rounding because it's who he is. And we were seeing signs of it. He's going and delivering trucks and he's thinking about it and he's just like miserable the whole time. And then he's going into that room and he sees the poker game and he figures out what everybody has and it's right there. And that's why his girlfriend is upset and trying to shut it down when he talks about reading their hands cold for the judge, because like she sees it too. Like, he wants to get back in the game. So like Worm tempts him, but like temptation only really works if that's something that somebody wants. And so I think he would have gotten there. It just wouldn't have been so dramatic.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there's so many different ways that you could read it. It's like the movie seems very fatalistic. The judge who just gives him $10,000, just wow. But this judge, he's like this, you know, it's not even a choice. Like, this just is, like, you are who you are, and that's all there is to it.
I love that speech, dude. I love it so much, man.
The elders said I had a 40-year-old's understanding of the Midrash by the time I was 12. But by the time I was 13, I knew I could never be a rabbi.
Why not?
Because for all I understood of the Talmud, I never saw God there.
You couldn't lie to yourself.
I tried. Well, I tried like crazy. People are counting on me.
If you had to do it all over again, would you make the same choices?
What choice?
I don't know that I love the message of it, but it's just delivered so well. Martin Landau just kills that. It is the speech that stands out in that movie. And I'm not sure I agree with everything that's in that speech, but I love it, man. It just like, it's why movies are dangerous in a way, like why this show has to exist, because you can watch something you love so much. Yeah. And then if you start to think about that thing, which you will never think about it normally, when you start to think about it, you're like, I don't know if I agree with that.
This is why I'm really uncomfortable about it, is that I think that it buys into this idea. You know, the other source that we found that I really dig and that I'm excited that we found it is a book called Toxic Masculinity, Casino Capitalism, and America's Favorite Card Game by Andrew Muno. We read the intro in chapter 3 of this called On Tilt, The Poker Mindset, Toxic Masculinity, and the Alt-Right. And to just, you know, connect that to what you're just saying.
Yeah, please do.
Which is that it's like, I feel like there's this justification deep down that it's like, this is who you are and you're good at it and you can make it and you can do it. And Matt Damon, this is right when Good Will Hunting is about to break, is when he starts making this movie and it gets huge while he's making this movie. And he's, you know, got this kind of super capable, fast talking and better than you. How do you like those at them apples? Like he's puts it in your face. Like he owns you because he's aggrieved in a lot of ways and he's entitled in a lot of ways. And Michael Kimmel's, you know, Angry White Men talks about this being a pretty dangerous mindset. And you're right. The speech is incredible. And it's a really good example of where they get one of those incredible, you know, quote, old-time actors to play a relatively small part in the movie. But because it's like the moral center and it sits at a point in the movie where it tells the protagonist, like, this is where you will go in this movie. It's a very key moment. And then I think a lot of people can look at it and see themselves in that moment and believe that there's no choice and it just takes all the accountability out of their lives. And I think that's what I'm really worried about. I don't know.
No, and I agree. And that was the second time I saw you uncomfortable, but I did note it in the first episode. I wanted to talk about it in this one because it's not what he's saying in the speech, it's how he's saying it. He's just oozing with charisma. When he says that, he draws you in and you want to listen to what he's saying.
It's a tragic story.
Coated with so much wisdom. Like you just hear the way he says it. And
he's got big weepy eyes. He's got those big weepy eyes going on. He does. Yeah.
For people who don't know, Martin Landau, probably most famous for Mission Impossible. He was one of the leads of the television series, but he did some movies along the way and just super famous guy. I think he won an Oscar a couple years before he died for what was the Tim Burton one that was talking about Ed Wood. I think it's Ed Wood. Yeah. He plays Bela Lugosi in Ed Wood. Dude's an amazing actor and he just knows how to play it perfectly.
Yes.
Which is what makes that speech dangerous, because that speech is very much, you could look at it as like almost a fascism narration, right? Like you can, like I was thinking about this when I was watching Conan the Barbarian for another podcast. I'd never thought of that as like a fascist movie. And then you watch it and it's like, no, this dude is going to pick up a sword and suddenly he's great at it and it's his destiny. His destiny is what he wants to do and he's going to force it. And it is that entitlement you're talking about, and it's dangerous. It just happens to be a great speech.
Well, this show is full of great speeches where if you hit the pause button and say, now let's talk about this, suddenly we realize maybe it's not such a great lesson. We're looking at you, Al Pacino. But I think that you make a good point that it's a very pivotal moment in the movie. And to just kind of come back to this idea of like whether or not it's Worm's fault or this is where he goes, you know, the movie structurally is overwhelmingly clear. Like this is his path. And it's not really so much because he meets Worm. I think that it's just, you're right, that creates the kind of risk and the kind of like situation where he literally loses everything. The moment with the cops is incredible. Our episode picks this up and we had a good chat about that. But also like the reminder that he's good enough to do it. Because again, if Worm doesn't show up in that moment, he'd have pulled that off no problem. And when you look at what he's doing, that's remarkable. Like that's pretty intense. And so I don't know, the movie seems to be arguing that this is his destiny in some capacity or another. There it is.
Something else I pulled from this is there's mentors that you kind of have to cast off in all of these movies, right?
Yeah. But one of the only coaches that we don't fire all season. Sorry, go ahead.
He's great, but
Kanish gets to stay. The problem is nobody listens to him.
That's the thing. And so for Mike to fulfill what he needs to do, like for his philosophy of playing poker, he cannot do Kanish's thing. He has to marry Kanish's thing with his own thing. So he will do the thing where he takes the rounds, takes his time and doesn't cheat, but he will also push all those chips in if he really thinks that he can win and if he thinks he's really got him. Whereas like Kanish would not do that because he's not going to risk his rent. And so that's where we see it there. In The Hustler, you get two mentors that Paul Newman can't trust in a way. He's got the one who holds back 1500 to protect him when he's losing to Fats. Mm-hmm. But truthfully, and I know this sounds ridiculous because we see where he ends, but if he had gone another 12 hours, he might have taken fat. And that's the crazy thing about it. And we'll never know because he held back that 1500. And so this guy was the wrong guy for Paul Newman to have. And then even worse is the gambler who's staking him because he's just like ruining his life while he's doing it.
Right.
But then over the top, it's really crazy because like the hustler is the mentor, and the mentor who is the hustler cannot be trusted with his son, you know?
Going cross-eyed here, but yes.
And his son doesn't trust him constantly. And his son has to remind him of things.
He's not a very trustworthy guy when you kind of stop. Again, we have no idea why he left. And we don't know what the letter said. And he let a child drive an 18-wheeler. These are all things that suggest he's got a little bit of a backstory.
But here's another mentor that can't be trusted in that movie. The grandfather. Because the mother doesn't trust him. And the kid trusts him until he doesn't trust him.
And also, he's just got a bunch of thugs. Like, who's got that many thugs? Who's got that many guys in suits willing to run around and grab a kid and take him wherever you tell him to on your airplane?
The grandpa's actually worse than Sly in this movie.
Yeah, your note that, like, if we just stop for a minute and sit on her perspective and be like, which one of these two people gets to keep the child? It's just like, just a sad movie.
It's
all of a
really
sudden.
Sad. And I would also pick Sly, but I don't feel good about it.
No, I wouldn't either. Again, he goes all or nothing for the chance to win a truck. He sells the truck that he's using to make a living to go 20-1 odds on himself in an arm wrestling contest as seed money.
That's such a sly narrative, too. I'm betting on myself. That's just like, well, I did it for Rocky, so I'll just do it again for this cannon picture.
Trick is you just gotta eat a bunch of raw eggs and believe in yourself and try really hard. Eat more raw eggs. And get swole.
I work out my arm in the truck. I just got this ring and I just pull it down.
That freaking God. When you sent me that, I just my head exploded. I never thought such a beautiful thing was possible. Sylvester Stallone in a truck with his son working out his arm. Why? Let's hope it's for arm wrestling. Anyhow.
And that's why this is on Patreon, baby.
My God. Yeah, so anyway, you can't trust those guys, and definitely not that one. It's funny that, like, with the hustler, like, I kind of take the other side with his very first dude that was supporting him. I think he may have been right at the beginning, and had he stuck with him, maybe they could have made, again, they could have made a living, they could have worked it out, but it wasn't good enough for him. He wanted, you're right, like, he needs to take fat. Like, that's what he's got to do is that. And so he's just got to cut him loose and let him do it.
It's exactly what the Kanish thing is.
Right. That they seem very similar to me. Right. There it, oh, see.
Yeah, we can go town to town. We can take these low stake games. And we'll always make money,
right?
And we'll be fine. Like, we'll just live out of hotels and restaurants, and we'll just have a great time traveling across the United States. The problem with that is that Newman's character wants to be the dude who everybody comes to. You know, he wants to be the guy who's known as the best. So that's just antithetical.
And is that what Damon's doing in Rounders, do you think? Is that the same kind, or is he just going for glory?
I think there's an element of it. Like, there's a lot of the hustler in Rounders because he wants to be on TV and win.
Right. Yeah. He wants to sit at the table with the guys that are there every single time and beat him. And it's not said outright, but you definitely have enough pieces to put that together.
He kind of says it, though, in a way when he talks about how I belonged in that room with KGB. Like, it's that belonging.
Right.
Like, I'm not going below my weight here. Like, I belong with these guys and I belong on the World Series of Poker. You know, like, it's the same kind of thing. The over the top is just... It's just a mess in that regard.
He needs a truck. He just needs a truck, and he's got to get the truck. And my Stallone is not working this episode. I'm not going to keep trying it. Or maybe I will. Who cares?
I think people always appreciate a Schwarzenegger or Stallone, and the worse, the better sometimes.
It's true.
Like, the key to doing a Schwarzenegger, for example, is just you just go, la, 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 which everybody our age has learned, but it never fails to get a snicker.
Everybody get down.
Yeah, you say, get down. Get down again. Get down some
more. Keep getting down.
Get to the chopper again. Get down. Keep getting down some more.
The pavement was his enemy. See, I start to lose it when I go to the quiet one. So.
When not even talking about it, but I'm having a good time with it. It just shows.
That's a, you know, this country used to make movie stars that sounded weird. Like, what happened to that?
Yeah.
All right, so one last reminder. This was half of an episode, so you can hear the rest of it at patreon.com/webwithsoundlabs, and we'll see you next week. Into movies? How about movies with sports? We deconstruct the plots, examine what makes these movies tick, back it up with academic literature, and have a few laughs along the way on Fields of Glory. Listen to the sharpest horror movie podcast out there. Zach and Matt love, and sometimes hate, everything the genre throws at them. If you want good analysis as well as a good time, listen to Watch No Evil. You can find all of our Redwood Sound Lab shows at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you find and listen to podcasts.